Folks, welcome back to the Biz World Channel, the NBC Network, with your host, Hurricane H. New day, new show. Obviously, it's a business discussion today with my guest, who is a co-founder and chief purpose officer at PurposeU, also a co-founder of Blueprint Business Architecture. He co-wrote books. He's been on broadcast TV. I mean, he's remarkable. He's doing a lot of stuff. And he also can definitely, help us understand, how to operate and why should we choose ourselves in a way. And actually, that's kind of like, brought from the book that he co-wrote, Why Should I Choose You? So without any further ado, I have with me Ian. I'm going to say it correctly this time. I'm going to try. Ian Shamendy. Did I say it right?
Good, yes.
All right. Because with names, I'll try to be very sensitive with that because I know how that feels. But hey, Ian, welcome to the show, man. Thank you so much for being with us. And really looking forward to your just insights because I think you have so much to bring to our business people out there. And your formula, your blueprint, an architecture designed for businesses is something we want to hear. So before we get that, let's talk about a little bit about you, your background, how you got into all this, and how did you get into designing these steps, I would say, and we'll get to it deeper.
Sure. Well, I have sort of an origin story. And it was my very first job, which was in advertising. I was a copywriter. And so I had to write for my clients. And every time, I look at the stuff that I'm pumping out, and it was cliche driven. It was banal. It was generic. I was trying to capture the authenticity of my client or the product or the service or whatever. And it was, as I sat there and pounded away on my typewriter, yes, my typewriter, I was just producing a whole bunch of crap. So I went to a art director in my agency and I said, "Can you make me a sign that said, 'Is that true?' So that as I'm typing and I put it on the wall behind my typewriter, I'm constantly reminded to ask myself, is what I am writing true? Is it authentic? Is it organic? Is it, sadly, it didn't help me become a better writer. But when I then moved on into my career, I had a number of interesting zigs and zags. I was a computer consultant for a while. I was in the television business for a while. And then about 20 years ago, with a partner, I started a strategy business. And we were basically, our positioning was to be a cross between a management consulting firm and a creative agency. So we were bringing more creativity to the process of management consulting. But what happened over the next 5 to 7 years is we kept discovering things that we would start to use over and over again. And over time, the things that we were using over and over again were more and more of our business, and the sort of customizing became less and less until about 7 or 8 years in, we had a fully baked methodology, system, process, whatever you want to call it. I call it the meat grinder because, you come with your raw material, your company, you've seen what the meat grinder can produce, and you say, "I want me some of that." And I've got this standard thing, and I crank, and at the other end comes your version of good sausage. But you don't come to me and say, "Can I change what the handle looks like?" Because it is now a product. And the product is called a blueprint. And a blueprint, what it sort of flows from one of the most basic beliefs that I have in business. And that is that the single most important thing a business has is whatever it is at its core that makes it uniquely remarkable. Right? What is it that makes you uniquely remarkable as a business? Not what are your value propositions for your products and services. No, What makes you uniquely remarkable as a business? One thing at your core. And if you think that that doesn't exist, right? And for big, sprawling companies, how could there be one thing? Think about IBM. What was IBM doing in the 1940s and 1950s? What role did it play in business? It was the supplier of the most essential technologies to the largest businesses in the world. Fast forward 80 years. What role does IBM play in the business community? It provides the most essential technology to the biggest companies in the world. Something is keeping it on that course. And what I'm telling you or contending is that contained inside the culture is what makes it uniquely remarkable. IBM can't tell you what that is. Well, certainly not in our standard at Blueprint, which is you've got to define that in 7 words or less, right? And if you think that's not many words, it's actually usually 2 or 3 or 4. But to back up a bit, this fundamental belief that I have that your single most important strategic asset is knowing what makes you uniquely remarkable, 98% of the companies in the world don't know what that is. And I think that that's criminal. And if you buy my assertion that nothing is more important in a company than knowing what makes it uniquely remarkable, show me where that's taught in business school. Show me where it's taught in any training program inside a company. So, you know, I just think it's fascinating. To me, it's self-evident. Knowing your superpower is your most important strategic asset. And the fact that 98% of the companies don't know is crazy. So, but here's the thing. Okay, so you know, let's say you're able to define what makes you uniquely remarkable in 7 words or less. So what? And the so what is, you can now use it to design everything that you do. All the operations, all the day-to-day, you know, manifestations and activities of the company, all the strategic direction of the company, everything that it does can be designed and guided by what makes you uniquely remarkable, so that it is always uniquely remarkable. And then the other thing you can do, whoops, this side, is you can design everything you say from the standpoint of what makes you uniquely remarkable, so that every time you're communicating, you are communicating what makes you uniquely remarkable. That superpower, that unique value that only you have. That was a bit of a monologue there. Sorry about that, Eric.
No. It's perfectly fine. I'm just absorbing it all. And you know, I mean, I'm listening to you. And it is an eye-opener because the way you present it, I mean, you start thinking about it. You know, you are into a real thing here because, you know, it's you said it well when you said it's not your value what you propose into the world, because I think that's where we all kind of get caught with, because we think that's what it is. Also, I think as businesses in general, what we see, whoever's out there in business or trying to be in business, you try to figure out how to be competitive, what kind of product, what kind of service, and how you're going to design it, and maybe even mimic some other stuff that's out there, maybe copy a couple of things. But really, what's your individual brand signature, things like that? And this is beyond. And I think I get where you are, you know, going, because even I've worked for corporate for 30 years. I've owned a couple of businesses. I have a business, you know, a couple now. And you're right. It's very difficult to describe it, as you said, in 7 words or less, and what it is. Now, I know, for example, my purpose here, you know, or my business, I know what that is. Now, maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you can guide me right now, but that would be an interesting one, right? But, you know, but I'm in for the test here. You know, again, for me, it's enlighten, inspire, and motivate, and educate. You know, that's really, you know, the concept that I have. Now, you know, maybe that's not that. Maybe that's the vision. Maybe that's the mission. And that's really what brings us to your unique, you know, concept of architecture and Blueprint, is because what is that? What is the difference between vision, mission, and purpose? And these are like things that we all kind of sometimes kind of mush up together. And I'm not even sure if we see it. I mean, you go to corporations, you have like a vision, you have a mission, you know, they're all right there. You have a, you know, a tag or motto, whatever. You have different things. that make the company, the signature of the company, but what it is really, as you said, the one thing. So I appreciate what you said, but I do want to go back because you made me laugh when you said, you know, typewriter back in the days. You know, for some of the OGSs, yes, they do have those. They still have those, probably some antique shop right now, but that's how, you know, things were being done, you know, back in the days. But I love the concept that you said about, for example, the example of IBM. One of the earliest, biggest, you know, companies that manufacture, I mean, what is it, International Business Machine, right? So it's really what it was. And they're still doing the same thing. They just innovated, you know, whatever they started back then to the highest level of tech, you know, that's available using all the innovations that are out there. So it is a different, but their essence is the same. Maybe that's really, you know, maybe a word that I can relate to, the essence of what you do and what is your, you know, purpose of whatever you created. So am I getting that correctly or how am I doing?
Yeah. So, you know, the challenge, there's many challenges with mission, vision, and values. And I have a number of funny stories about them. But at the end of the day, I defy you to find me somebody who can tell you the difference between mission and vision. They're used interchangeably. Mm-hmm. And then values, right? Like everybody talks about values. Oh, we've got our values. We've got our value list. They're hanging in the on the wall in the lobby. And that's awesome. You know, you got that checkbox. But here's the thing. There's about 15 words that is the master list of values for corporations. And companies choose 5 or 6 from that list, from the same list. And, you know, they're usually words like honesty and accountability and responsibility and, you know, these kinds of things. And the thing is, okay, I'm a new employee at your company, and your value, you have a value that is honesty. How does that guide my behavior? Like, if I'm an honest person, how do I be more honest? And if I'm a dishonest person, I'm going to ignore you. You know? So here's the thing. The point of these things is to guide behavior. A mission, a vision, they're to guide behavior. And I this is a long time ago, but I was working with a client with his whole senior executive team. And he said, when are we gonna talk about our mission and vision? Or no, he just said our mission statement. When are we gonna talk about our mission statement? And I said, well, you know, we hadn't planned on doing that, but what is your mission statement? And he said, I don't remember what it is, but we should work on it. And I said, well, just paraphrase it for me. And he said, no, I don't. I'm going to call my assistant. And I said, no, don't call your assistant. And I turned to his senior executive team and I said, can any of you tell me what your mission statement is? And they were all deer in the headlights, right? Oh, don't put me on the spot. But none of them knew. And I turned to the CEO and I said, I don't know how much time you spent on it, and I don't know how much money you spent on it. But if none of you know what it is, I can guarantee you there is not a single person in this organization who knows what it is. And therefore, the thing that you spent all that time and money on is not guiding anybody's behavior. What's the point? And so when Ken and I started this business, Ken was my business partner for about 17 years, and then sadly he died during COVID. But when we started this business, we started it as a strategy business. And that meant mission, vision, and values. And we said, so we had to do one of two things. Either train people in what mission, vision, and values really are, or just forget about them and do something different. And so this blueprint that we've created, it's got all of that stuff embedded in it. It's got the North Star embedded in it. We do this whole thing on beliefs, not values, and beliefs are far better than values as guiding principles. We figure out your methodology as a company. And this is another thing. If 98% of companies don't know what makes them uniquely remarkable, 99% of companies don't know that they have a methodology, right? General Motors has a methodology. It doesn't know what it is. Every company has a methodology. And that is what is actually at the root of your blueprint, because that is the substance of an organization. is that, you know, that's the essential substance of an organization. How do you do what you do? What's your methodology?
You know, I'm listening to you, and you are like almost asking the questions. And like, don't talk about a deer in front of a car here. It's like, you know, I'm feeling the same feeling right now because, you know, you're right. Like, you throw in these things, and you know, you work in a corporation, and you think everybody's got these things lined up. But by the way, I've been in meetings as well where, you know, a lot of this stuff gets lost in translation, and it's all over the place. And some people buy into it, some people don't. I mean, I've even worked in a company where you were literally tested on the mission, you know, statement. You know, as the CEO walked by, he would ask you the question, like, what's our mission statement? And you're supposed to memorize it. But as you said, memorizing one thing and believing it and, you know, and applying it in real life.
Guiding behavior.
Exactly. It's like you said, behavior. And a lot of people behave almost the opposite of what a company's mission or vision or even values are. And that's why you have termination, you have this and the other one, you have, you know, disgruntled employees, you have issues in the workplace. You know, we can talk about all that stuff that happens in the workplace, which is, you know, based on human factors. I mean, we obviously, companies are, conformed and formed of multiple, unique individuals who kind of make it. And then you have all these clashes of the titans and so on and so forth. It doesn't matter what hierarchies are, but that's usually what happens. And you get the best example. And I know you deal mostly with the decision makers and C-suite level type, you know, where that's where it's all cooking at that boardroom. But really, you know, at the end of the day, as you're right, I mean, everybody's got this high expectation of these individuals because their abilities, their expertise and stuff, but they're still humans and they think they got it. And you said it well, that, you know, give me, you challenged even on air right now, the idea of a business, you know, concept, a business school that has some of this stuff. And, you know, that's another thing. There are schools of thoughts out there. Different business schools have different, you know, I guess, signatures, you know, formulas, if you want to call them. Even methodology, we would say, right? But they're all different. And, you know, that's that in a way, there's a beauty to that, right? Because we don't have one standard version of things. You can get from all of these and extract whatever you want. What you did on the contrast is that you kind of built a fine blueprint that everybody kind of like, it's like, that's the mold. And then you have different varieties of, you know, different things that you can put in. And then you give them, based on what they're working on, a particular unique, I would say, signature to them, you know, and that's what I'm gathering from your blueprint. And by the way, everybody knows what a blueprint, well, maybe not everybody, but I mean, I think we can understand what a blueprint is. I mean, if you're building a building, you go to the architect, you get your blueprints and you submit them to your development or developer in the city and all the stuff, get all the approvals and you start working based on those architectural designs. That's your blueprint. We use it in business. We use it in actual true construction and stuff. But, you know, nothing unique that you haven't heard if you're watching or listening right now. But the concept in business, as you said, there is that formula. We can refer to it as such. You mentioned methodology. And I love what you said, that everybody kind of is doing something. We all have workflows and things are happening. And they're just happening sometimes for years. And a lot of companies, they start, they wing it, and it's happening, and they get bigger than their own, you know, selves. And by the way, it's very common. Companies start and they get to a critical point. They scale, you know, to a degree, and it's very difficult to manage. Now you have too many moving parts and it's like, you know, growing pains, as they say in business, right? So it's real stuff. But so you've discovered this phenomena over, you know, trials and stuff, being a strategist. By the way, that's another thing that you mentioned that is powerful, is that strategy. You know, I mean, there's got to be a strategy behind everybody that's running a business or wanting to run a business. And by the way, this is a great discussion for, you know, maybe existing businesses, they have these experts that they pay and consultants and things like that. But there are people that are new to business. They want to be in business, whether it's a small business level or they have aspirations to make it big. But, you know, they may not have the resources and the access to information and tools, you know, that will help them, you know, expedite their process and grow in the right way. Now, your formula can do that. Your kind of concept can make that happen. So let's bring that, you know, to the people, because you're right. Vision, mission, all this stuff. And you talked about values versus, you know, the actual concept itself. So what is that? I mean, I mentioned the word purpose personally. So what is the purpose in the event of a business?
What is the what? Sorry?
Purpose. You know, like, because I mentioned earlier.
What role does purpose play in a business?
Yep.
So part of my frustration being in the purpose business, part of my frustration with purpose is that most people who talk about purpose talk around it because they don't know what it is. So they talk around it. They talk about the benefits of it, talk about why it's needed, and they say, "Okay, go get your purpose." And all these problems will be solved. But they don't tell you what purpose is, or if they do, they tell you in very academic terms. And you listen to it and you go, I don't even know where to start with that. So the guy that clarified everything for me was Pablo Picasso, the painter. And he has a very famous quote that is that says, the meaning of life is to find your gift. And your purpose is to share it with the world. And so I just rephrased it to make it a little simpler. And I said, your purpose is to find your gift and share it with the world. And if you accept that definition, then your gift is just what I was talking about before. What makes you uniquely remarkable? What's your gift? What is it that makes you uniquely remarkable? So when I'm doing a blueprint with an organization and defining what makes them uniquely remarkable in seven words or less, well, that's your gift. That's your purpose. Once you know your gift, now you can share it with the world. Maybe I can give you an example of a company. And so, because I, you know, all this is so conceptual. I had breakfast with the CEO of a company. It was a retail shelving company, right? So Home Depot builds a box. They go in, they put up all the rack shelving, and then when they're done, the store is ready to open. And the CEO said to me, I know there's a magic to my business, but every time I open my mouth to talk about it, it sounds so generic, so banal, so like anything anybody else could say. And I said, John, it's because you don't know what business you're really in. And to his credit, to his credit, he said, you're right, I don't know what business I'm really in. Now, John knew he was in the business of, you know, he played in the sandbox of retail shelving, but he didn't know what part of that sandbox he owned uniquely. So we did a blueprint. And now the way, just as a quick aside, a blueprint is the CEO and up to three key other decision makers in the organization. That's the draft team that puts the blueprint together in a series of Zoom facilitated discussions. So now this was done in purpose, in person, because this was about 15 years ago. Anyway, we're in the blueprint, and where the conversation got interesting was when they talked about how they had been in business for three generations, right? Not three decades, but three generations. And because of that longevity, they had developed techniques and processes and systems and procedures that enabled them to get finished significantly faster. So you can imagine if they get a Home Depot done a month faster than a competitor, that means the store opens a month sooner, and that's a month of retail sales that the company was not anticipating. Found money, about $2 million a week at Home Depot, and that's real money in my world. So as we're having this conversation about getting finished faster, one of his VPs says as a joke, this was just a joke, he says, you know, in our signs where it says opening soon, I want ours to say opening sooner. And I just went, oh my God, that's brilliant. That is absolutely brilliant. And that became the expression of what made this retail shelving company uniquely remarkable, opening sooner. And here's the magic in it. If you're the VP of construction at Home Depot, right? There are two things that make your hair gray: staying on time, staying on budget. And when you have the supplier who is most important to keeping you on time, say to you, I'm not only going to beat your deadline, I'm going to beat it by so much that you generate revenue that the company didn't anticipate. The VP of construction knows that when he or she hears the two words, opening sooner, those two words trigger that whole thought process in their head. Oh my God, I don't have to worry about hitting my deadline. And the company's going to open sooner. Like, okay, tell me more. And now they're leaning in, right? And that is what a well-crafted purpose statement or expression of what makes you uniquely remarkable does. It grabs the buyer by the emotion, you know, by the heartstrings, and says, you know, and they get emotionally engaged and they go, whoa, I haven't heard this story before. Tell me more. And it was interesting because I just came full circle. I was at an event a week ago and I ran into a guy I hadn't seen in about 20 years, and he's got a startup, and he told me about it, and I thought it was quite a clever idea. And he said, yeah, we're doing good. And it was like the tone of his voice. I said, what's going on? And he said, he said the same thing that the shelving company said. He said, this thing, like every company should have this, no question. And if I could only get them to see what I see, you know, we'd be selling like that. But it's the same thing. And this is a symptom, right? This is a symptom of not knowing what makes you uniquely remarkable, is that when you get to the communications point, you know, down the road, you get to the communications point and you're saying, here's why you should buy, or in the words of my book, why should I choose you, right? It's just so generic and so banal.
You know, so
that's a symptom. If that's a problem that you're having, you know, you got to go way back to the beginning and figure out that one thing that made you uniquely remarkable, that was in the little seedling when you started the company and has now germinated.
That's pretty powerful, because what you're talking about, like every company, and I think your statistics may be way on the money, because when you say 98%, I think if people listen to this, you know, in the corporations, and I'm talking about the blueprint level, as you design them, as you describe them, you know, that'd be a question that could be on the table. And a lot of people may not even have the ability to answer it right away, and they'll have to figure it out. But at least it is a key element. And by the way, this is a question that in sales, in the world of sales, is the main important thing. If I can, why choose me?
Exactly. In my book, again, it's called Why Should I Choose You? Answering the Single Most Important Question in Business in 7 Words or Less. In the appendix, we phoned about 100 companies. And just at the ground, you know, phone sales, phone customer service, whatever. And said, you know, one of them was, I phoned 3 Lexus dealerships. And I made sure that they were all equal distance from me. And I phoned them up and I said, why should I choose you? And they all said the same thing. Where do you live? I said, I got 2 other dealerships that are just as close as you. So why should I choose you? And oh my God, they had no answer. Well, so one guy, I got to give this guy credit. He said, we have the cleanest waiting rooms. He said, no, you know, all the Lexus dealers have clean waiting rooms. He said, we have the best selection of magazines and newspapers. And he said, no, all the Lexus dealerships have that. He named like 2 or 3 other things. And then he said, you know what? If I could answer that question, I'd be the top salesman in the country. So give him credit for his humility. On the other end of the spectrum, I talked to a guy, and you know, he said, where do you live? I said, it's not a factor. Why should I choose you? And he said, in my 25 years in this business, I have never asked that question. And I thought, dude, you're in sales. That's the only question you ever ask. Every question you are asked is a variation of why should I choose you?
Right. People have a choice. And you know, why you? You know, just Ian, a true story. This is something that I've experienced in the same light. So in my world, in New York, in the managed care space, so the insurance, for government programs, all the health plans, especially in the Medicare space, like the senior markets, there's a season. And during the season, which is actually current right now, we're in the middle of it, there is a panel that's been designed by the Department of the Aging in New York City. And so they gather all the plans, representatives to, at least, they invite all of them. So 10 or 15 show up. They basically are panelists, and you have a bunch of social workers, people, advocates and so on that sit. And each plan, they get asked the same question about their benefits, the design, this, that, the premiums and all this stuff. And then there's one last question. How is your plan different from everybody else's in there? And when that question goes up, it becomes, like as you said, it's a very difficult question. That's really the hardest one. By the way, everybody wings it, but you're right. It is a tough place to be when, because technically we all are the same. So as you said, three Lexus are the same. What makes one Lexus versus better than the other? And by the way, if you're an audience watching or listening right now, you know this. You've been to multiple, you probably bought a car from one dealer, didn't like the dealer, and went to buy another car, the same car from a different dealer that was a different experience. Whatever that experience is, maybe that there's a signature there as why two were they were different. And really that's what it is. That's really what we're trying. But for the people that working in a company to identify what that reason is, what makes them different, now that's really the true, I guess that's the million or trillion dollar question.
Yeah, no, you so the here's the thing. Even if any of these companies in the appendix of my book, at the upper levels, even if some of those executives or even the CEO could answer the question, why should I choose you? Or what is it that makes you uniquely remarkable? It doesn't trickle down to the levels where its application matters, right? Like the salespeople need to know that. Sales is the oxygen of the organization. If sales don't happen, everything else breaks down.
Thank you for that. I appreciate you. I always say that the sales department is the heartbeat. It's the heart. It's the pumping of all the blood. Without it, everybody dies.
I like to think of it as the oxygen, Lung Association. I don't know if they still use this as a tagline, but I sure hope they do because it was so brilliant. And it was when you can't breathe, nothing else matters. Right? And I think of that when I think of sales being the oxygen of the organization. Your manufacturing can be screwed up. You can have supply chain problems. And of course, that's going to affect your sales. Or how you operate, how effective. But if you don't have sales, then
Over.
you're in deep trouble.
Well, thank you. And again, I love the exercise that you've done and the question. But I really love more the idea that you said it, and so eloquently, the fact that you're right. There might be people in the boardroom and the C-suite level, maybe at a mid, that they know what they want. Maybe they have that purpose. They understand what makes them unique. But as you said, does anyone in the process, in the line of business that is, in front of customers, understand that? And by the way, I think if I just had a show the other day, we talked about similar stuff, that about call centers when you call people and the service and how they are and so on and so forth. These people don't align to really what the mission. Like the mission says one thing, this is what we do, but then you call them, it's like completely the opposite of what really you expect from the company. And so that's a big problem. And we all, by the way, if you're watching and listening, folks, you probably have the same feeling that you call somewhere and you don't get what you expect from that same company. And and if you talk to the hierarchies, they're going to be like, pumping on, we thrive on this XYZ. But when you talk to an employee, they may not have that same feeling. Maybe they don't care about the company the way they should because they're being mistreated, being underpaid, whatever the case may be, or just basically nobody's training them. Because that's a big part, right? Everybody has to believe in the same formula. Everybody has to be on the same frequency in order for it to be, working. And by the way, I've experienced it as well, where I was had the sales, in a couple of places, and you're right, we're always constantly like, you know, discussing these things. We want everybody to be aligned exactly to as to we are. If we say one thing, another department is saying something different, you know, and we've had these problems where like, you know, your team is trained to say XYZ and they have a separate training. And I always like was a champion, like, folks, if you're going to, you know, everybody else that touches on our members should have the same training, even though they're not salespeople. They should know what we know. They should know exactly how we do it, how what's going on, what we do, our job, and so on and so forth, so they can answer correctly and have to be consistent with what we say. Because the minute someone says, oh, your agent said X, you're saying Y, I don't trust you. Now here goes your deal. Here goes your member retention or client retention. It's a problem. And that's a fact, actually, that I've experienced and I've seen it. And I've fought it many times. And sometimes you fight, you know, the current because, you know, people don't like when you start, you know, calling on their faults or their departments, you know, faults. But it's real. But as you said, it comes from the top. If everybody is aligned, top, bottom is all the same. There's no difference because we all, I mean, it's like a same boat, right? If you put holes in the boat, it sinks.
but if they're not aligned, that points to a huge problem in a completely different area, which is culture. And like purpose, culture is an area that nobody knows what the hell it is, right? So you ask a definition of culture and you will get a million different, it's the rules, you know, it's the agreement, it's the processes, and then you get all the academic things as well. And, you know, at the end of the day, culture is, I could never find a definition for it, so Ken and I came up with our own. And culture is how we cooperate in a business, how we cooperate. And it may sound too simplistic, but if you think about the underpinnings of cooperation, how two people, how groups of people interact in a very positive way so that 1 and 1 equals 3, that kind of cooperation, there is so much going on under the hood there that is so complex. But it's all sort of captured in the word cooperation. And then how this relates to purpose is that if purpose is that one thing that makes you uniquely remarkable at your core, culture is the social extension of that. So, you know, if culture is how we cooperate, it's like, okay, so how do we cooperate? Well, let's start with what makes us uniquely remarkable as an organization and figure it out from there. We're going to use this as the filter to design the culture that is, you know, in the words of Peter Drucker, culture eats strategy for breakfast. Well, design a culture that, you know, and that's so true. Design a culture that doesn't just not eat your strategy, but that actually elevates it. So if your strategy is based on what makes you uniquely remarkable and your culture is based on what makes you uniquely remarkable, these two things are just going to work together to elevate themselves. And the better the strategy works, the more exciting the culture gets.
Well, so Ian, you know, since you mentioned the word strategy and blueprint, now you defined your blueprint according to your concept, but let's just talk about strategy. Because again, do companies have real strategy?
Not anymore.
There you go.
They have action plans. They have areas of focus and they have action plans. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've really just become an economy of project managers. And the longer range thinking doesn't happen nearly as much now as it used to. So strategy, I still consider myself a strategist. And this is just my flavor of strategy, right? You start with what makes you uniquely remarkable and you work out from there.
Well, again,
give me some alternatives as a starting point. Right? And the thing is, whatever that is that makes you uniquely remarkable, is baked in from day one. And here's why. I'm going to say another outrageous thing. Every company was started for the same reason. Every single company was started because one or more people said, I can do this better. And they have whatever that better is. That's in their head. And they set out, like I told you, my buddy I talked to last week, he had this great idea in his head. And he's got the money to build a company around it. And now he doesn't know what it is, so he can't tell people it's magic. I went off track there. I was talking about...
Oh, no, it's all good. You were talking about strategy, but you have your own flavor of strategy, as you said, in the companies.
Right.
Yeah, the companies.
Start with what makes you uniquely remarkable and work out from there. I remember I asked you the rhetorical question. Where else would you start from? Like, where else is there to start from other than throw spaghetti against the wall and see what works?
But that some people will call that strategy, although it's a butchered
That's
one.
Anti-strategy. If they call that strategy, they don't know what that is. That is anti-strategy. That is the opposite of strategy.
Well, I agree with you. I'm just saying some will say, like, my strategy is just to figure out a few things and see what sticks and let me work from there.
That's not a strategy.
But I agree with you. I'm just saying.
That is a rationalization for not knowing what the heck you're doing.
Ooh. but thank you for clarifying that.
No, because no competent business person, nor would any competent business organization accept that as an approach.
I'm surprised. I've kind of seen some of that stuff happening in my experiences, and it's frustrating.
I said competent.
Okay, you weren't me. I like that.
Lots of irresponsible companies, irresponsibly run, irresponsibly managed.
But I have to say, Ian, is unfortunately, so there's a couple of things of companies, right? There's a couple of ways to define companies. You have companies that are created by an individual or individuals with a core mission or a core something that they want to establish in this world, whatever that is, right? They have an idea and they want to make a difference and they have this great opportunity and they build a business around. So some continue with those things and they flourish and they build strategy around these things. They have not only a master plan, but they have action strategies, tactics, all the whole thing. And they build the right culture, as you said, that matches the purpose, the value around. But then in the middle of that course, maybe there's a retirement, there's someone that passes on. And then now you have people that are being appointed into that same company, but they don't have the same stake, you know, into that company. They're basically just given a title to run that stuff, or they come in without even understanding what that business is. You know, they may have skills in the business world, you know, that they've demonstrated. Now, in my world, I've seen that happen. Literally, people come in from, you know, with less experience in the world that you're in. They expect to have, you know, the same outcomes, or they come from different, I guess, you know, markets, and they expect to do the same thing in one market. And it doesn't sometimes fly. So there's decision making around putting the right candidates in the right place. And that makes a difference, as you said, whether we have a real strategy or we have a butchered, you know, completely incompetent process and stuff. And I've seen that happen. And it destroyed companies, many companies.
Okay, but that whole process that you describe is predicated on not running your business according to what makes you uniquely remarkable. Right? Because when you know what makes you uniquely remarkable, you communicate that as a selling feature to all of your hiring candidates. And what it does is it acts as a self-selection tool, because people who hear your purpose and say, they're going to say one of two things. They're going to say, whoa, I love that. I want to be part of this. Or they're going to say, nah. That's not really me. But they'll be clear. They'll be very clear. So the self-selection happens. And now you've got candidates coming to you because they want to advance your purpose, your strategy, right? You're not a generic organization that's bringing people in who can lurch the ship off of a profitable and successful course. You're asking them to come on and make the ship better, be a better version of itself, not a different version of itself.
But now, keyword.
I often get asked by companies who are about to go into a CEO search, shouldn't we wait? And it's like, no. You need to rush. You need to rush so that when you put your, you know, your thing out there to let quality people know that you have this opportunity available, they drool at the opportunity because of how effectively you communicate your purpose, the thing that makes you uniquely remarkable. They're like, or they say, oh, no, that's not me at all. That's not me at all. But that's good. You want that to happen, that selection. But for the candidates, right? So now you've got CEOs who know what they're applying for. They're much clearer on the position. And now they can tell you more accurately why you should choose them. Because they're like, oh, that's an inspiring purpose. And I buy into it because I totally get it upon hearing it. Here's my thoughts on how I can help. And now you've got someone expressing that they want to come in and make the ship a better version of itself, not have their ego lurch the company off in a wrong direction.
What you're saying here is so powerful, but also so important to understand, because when a company has a vacancy, as you stated, and they're not able to articulate why should I choose you to exactly. their candidates, then that's the problem. You're going to get, you know, ad hoc, you know, selection, and it's not going to be a compatible one, because again, you have not articulated well enough what is the true core of your value and purpose, you know, of whatever that you are in this world to do. And actually, by the way, I think if you look at job descriptions out there, and you can literally find job descriptions on LinkedIn and all these platforms right now, you start looking at that stuff and you'll be like, it's pretty generic stuff. It doesn't talk about what you say, like what makes each individual company unique on its own. It's like, it's all the same. You know, it's just, we're seeking this, that, the other. What is our culture? We are this, we're non-discriminatory, equal, blah, blah, blah. But that stuff is everybody. What, as you said, the key is not highlighted. And that's something, I don't know if you've experienced that, or at least you've...
Let me tell you how much I've experienced that. So I wasn't going to talk about this, but when COVID hit, I knew that we weren't going to get much business for like a couple of years. So I got my coaching certification and I became a business coach. And I wondered how the marketplace was going to speak to me to tell me to specialize. And it happened in the very first prospect call. He said, the pandemic has got me thinking. I don't like my career. I don't like where my life's going. I want to lead a life of meaning and purpose. And I said, that's awesome. What's your purpose? And he said, I don't know. And it made me realize that I could take this behemoth that I had co-developed over here for businesses, strip out some stuff that didn't pertain to an individual, add in some stuff that does pertain to an individual, and voila, I have an individual blueprint now. Hurricane, you define what makes you as a human being uniquely remarkable in 7 words or less, and then use that to design a life of meaning and purpose. So I started doing that just one-on-one with my clients. I would do that first, and then I would coach through the filter of their purpose. And then a guy that hired me to do blueprints, every time he became a CEO, he would hire me to do a blueprint. He said, I have an online training infrastructure that I can plunk on top of your personal blueprint. And rather than you doing it one-on-one, you can do it one to millions. And I just loved that idea. So we spent 2.5 years putting that together, and it's about to launch. And that's why you see on my screen there, the sevenwords.biz website is for Blueprint if you're a company, and the Purpose U, as in Purpose University.co, is to get your own personal blueprint, to find out what makes you as a human being uniquely remarkable in seven words or less. So a part of that process in the individual blueprint is I redesign the resume. And because, you know, here's the process. Everybody, you know, here's the process for going through resumes. No. Oh, maybe. That's interesting. No. And that's how much time you get. That's how much time your cover page gets. And
not
so,
anymore. Now you have algorithms. You don't even make it to that.
Okay, so that's a little old school, maybe. But here's the thing: is that I redesigned the resume so that it focused on what makes you uniquely remarkable. The cover page tells the story. It kind of looks like a traditional resume, but it's not when you look closely, because it tells the story of what makes you uniquely remarkable, step by step by step. And then, and I say to my clients, I don't care if you have 100 pages of attachments behind this. Make sure this is on top. Make sure it's the first thing they see, and don't make it longer than a page. So I was doing this with a university president because her time is up in 5 years, and then she will be looking for her last gig before she retires. And she had a very clear idea of what she wanted that gig to be as a university president. So we got to the resume stage, which is the last step in the process. And she said, I don't need to do this. I don't need a resume. I mean, I'm not even looking for a job for 5 years, and then I won't use a resume. And I said, just humor me and let's build this resume together, because it is a one-page communication of what makes you uniquely remarkable. So she played ball. And at the end of it, she said, oh my God, I love this. Every time I do public speaking, somebody says, send a bio. And I've got this, you know, generic bio that I send out. I'm sending this from now on. So that's how captivating it is, right? Is that it even captivated her, and she already knew the information, but she loved seeing it in that format. It just brought it to life in a whole different way in a career setting.
Well, thank you for bringing that up, because even for our nieces, because like you're talking about people who are even in the process of planning their retirement and still, you know, are ahead of the game because they know they're going to eventually have to be in front of audiences to promote their themselves, you know, to actually get the next gig or last, I guess opportunity before they set those retirement, you know, plans. But you know, for people that are much younger or just starting the career, it's the same thing. If you're, again, in the business world, and I love what you have concept for businesses and for individuals. I love, you know, you keep saying seven or less, you know, what is the magical number seven or less? You know, I mean, I think I get it, but
oh, just for our audience. It's what I call the three easies. It's easy to remember. It's easy to understand. And because it's easy to understand, it's easy to remember. And because it's easy to remember and easy to understand, it's easy to communicate. So you get it. It's stored and easily recalled. And then when you communicate it to somebody else, you do as an evangelist. Right. So I'll give you an example. My purpose statement is transforming confusion into clarity. And I love that process. I love, you know, I've got a methodology, like a personal methodology that I use. And I'm able to sort of break down big problems into super simple, you know, ways to look at things. And at that level, the high level solution pops out down here, but in a very self-evident way. And you just go, oh, God, right. Of course, of course. And but even a blueprint itself is transforming confusion into clarity because the company doesn't know who it is. And at the end of the day, it's like the veil lifts and the fog clears. You go, wow. And you love telling your story from that point on. Same with a personal blueprint that we're doing at Purpose U is, wow. You know, most people go through their lives thinking there's nothing special about them. They have no clue that every single person has a superpower. And the only reason you don't know that is you don't have a way to look for it. Well, now you do. If you, you know, if you go to Purpose U, we take you on a step-by-step process to work through how you figure out what it is that makes you uniquely remarkable and how to do it in 7 words or less. And you have, as you walk through this course, you've got two things holding your hand. You've got me, you know, on all the videos and the, you know, the Zoom meetings and all that sort of thing. And you have an AI assistant that we call Wordsmith. And Wordsmith helps you find the right words. Every step of the way, it's there. Just click of the button. Help me out. Help me out, Wordsmith. And boom, it's there.
I'm very, you know, intrigued the idea that you've even gone into the AI world, you know, in the concept, you know, because that's pretty fairly new. A lot of people haven't adapted to it. You already got into the mix of that, and I can see it, and it's applicable. It makes a big difference. It's a tool that can help in tremendously in a rapid way. I love what you said earlier about systems. You know, unfortunately, people don't create systems and processes, you know, in a certain way. And as you said, they just wing things, and maybe not strategy. You just figure out things as they go. It doesn't work that way. You have to have that. I love the concept of having something, a methodology that you've designed. Even the concept that you said, that the blueprint, and you referred to blueprint as like the CEO and three more senior people. Now, I do have a question about that. What if you're in a company and you discovered there is not enough candidates that can fill in the blanks in that blueprint of yours? You know, because maybe there's people in the roles, but they're not really ready to be part of the blueprint. Is that something that you?
That's never an issue. No, we have a conversation. The CEOs, this is always the CEO's project, right? So it's always the CEO that we're talking with to map this out. And the CEO always asks who should, you know, what's the criteria for people who should be on the draft team? And we have criteria for that. So, that's never an issue. It's never an issue.
So I'm glad to hear that, you know, at least for our businesses out there. So it is really on the CEO to determine who are the top players that are going to be in that blueprint and be part of that, you know, core team.
What's the criteria that we give them? Yeah.
Now, for businesses, how long does it take to get all this stuff together for them? Like, you know, to give them blueprint and make them ready and see what their true purpose is.
10 sessions of 2 hours each on Zoom. And we do them, we can do them one of two ways. We can do them a week apart, or we can do, if you want a more accelerated, we can do twice a week, as long as there's some time between the 2 hour sessions, to do Monday, Thursday, or Tuesday, Thursday, or Tuesday, Friday, something like that. The reason being, if you do them more than a week apart, you lose the thread of the conversation. And if you compress them too much, we actually give the team, the draft team, homework after every one. Now, don't worry. The homework is think about this, think about that, think about the other thing. As you go in, as you're doing the realities of your day-to-day business, this concept that is so interesting that we're talking about, see how it applies, where it applies, what it does, and then come back with your feedback. That's the kind of homework, right? So you need time for that percolation between sessions. So if we do it once a week, or we do a Monday, Thursday, let's say, the next session always starts further ahead than the last one ended because people are percolating in between. And that's an important part of the session.
And will be the same for individuals or same time frame, frequency sessions, all that, or it's another.
So this is a course that you do online. And how long does it take to do the course? I think that you can do it comfortably in 6 hours. Like if you wanted to, carve out Saturday afternoon and just do it, you'd be working pretty intensively. I think if you took it less than 6 hours, you would be rushing, which I would not recommend because I think you're missing stuff along the way. And then, it doesn't have to take much longer than 6 hours.
It's kind of like a self-assessment of based on the criteria, and you kind of build to it, and you guys figure out based on those responses. It's like doing the DISC, kind of concept of personalities and all that. Is that similar? And just to bring you closer to individuals.
It's not a personality assessment. It is a way to reveal your beliefs, wants, and talents. And those three things are the components of purpose. So if you can figure out your beliefs, wants, and talents, and let's say you've got three columns and you've got, I don't know, three to five things in each column, let's say. Then the challenge is to say, what are the words in 7 words or less that sum all of this up? Right? What's the common thread that runs through my beliefs, wants, and talents that brings them to life? That's your purpose. That's the one thing that makes you uniquely remarkable. But the components of what makes you uniquely remarkable are your beliefs, wants, and talents.
Intense stuff. But I think anybody watching or listening, this is as real as it gets, because I think we all owe it to ourselves to define those things for ourselves. And and especially if we're going to business, not only we want to identify who we are and what our talents are, because that also can affect how we run a business and so on and so forth. Because oftentimes I'm sure those things align. I mean, a CEO's personality and personal purpose of who they are is going to affect how they're going to run whatever business and build the strategy around it and create that focus and all that. So it's a very intriguing, proposition. Now you've done this for a few years, you're working on this, all the stuff is ready. We are coming to the end of the show, and I listen, we can spend another hour easily here, but you've defined what the programs look like and so on and so forth. And I guess they can just go to those websites that I'm looking at, and people can actually just connect there. So that's excellent. Now, anything you want to leave our audiences, individuals or business leaders, with today before we close our show?
I got I was I'm in Toronto in Canada, and there is a golf club way out in the West End of the city called the Mississauga Golf and Country Club, and it's one of the most exclusive clubs in Toronto. And so I'm sitting in front of their board pitching them, and they're all, KPMG and Boston and McKinsey and Pricewaterhouse. And the chair says to me, "What is it that appeals to you about getting our business? Is it that, if you do a good job with us, you can go out and you can pitch other clubs?" And I just went, I was quite taken aback. I said, no, not at all. No, it's how we change you. It's how you feel fundamentally changed at the end of this process because you have an awareness of the value of this horse you're riding that is so much greater than it ever was before. It's like the veil lifts and the fog clears, and you feel so light because now you know what to say. And now your salespeople know what to say. And now your accounting people, when they're at home talking to their neighbors or at parties and are talking about your business, they know what to say. Right? That is such an exciting feeling. And to Here's advice I always give my clients. Once you know your blueprint and once you've integrated it into your marketing and sales process, always pitch first. always pitch first, because everybody who goes behind you is going to have a generic pitch. And what you can say is, everybody who comes after us is going to tell you these three things or these five things. They are important, no question about it, but they're cost of entry. Here's what's really important. Opening sooner is what's really important. And then when your competitors come in and pitch and they say, we do these three things, that client is sitting there going, well, that's exactly what Ian said they were going to say, and it's just cost of entry. You got anything else to tell us? No? Okay, next. So it's just the, it's just, and I go back to my, I'll shut up now, but my friend who I bumped into last week, he is so frustrated. He knows he is sitting on a gold mine, and he cannot express what that gold mine is. And that's the only thing that's stopping him from having a hockey stick for revenue.
Sure he will once he discovers it. but you know, again, at least he's aware. And being that he's in touch with you now, this is going to be a lot easier for him, you know, to really navigate this. And you're right. A lot of people have great stuff that's cooking. They have to be able to extract it and make it very easily, as you said, remember it and be able to communicate it. So if you can get that, that's like everything is done. And I love what you said about, and this is for our audiences, always pitch first. You know, the first person that does anything is ahead of the game no matter what. And you're right. You know, it's very easy to undermine the other ones, because what are they going to do more? Especially if you have the core and you know exactly what you're bringing to them. As you said, opening sooner, that's a wrap. I mean, there's nothing you can do. We can't have opening the soonest. I mean, if you know what I mean, it's like, it's not going to work that way, right? So, listening, it's great to have you on. I mean, this was great insights in terms of our corporate leadership, you know, and even business ownership and anyone who wants to be there, but also, you know, it affects the individual person, because corporations are still individuals that are running the show, right?
Right.
So it's all about our human factor, understanding, you know, what our purpose is and so on and so forth, and be able to design our things, you know, in a way that is formal and very easy to dissect, to share, to train, and to have other people, you know, I guess, repeat comfortably with belief. It changes their dynamics, and that's really what it is. So thank you so much for the work that you're doing. Now, you have a book too, right? The one that you co-wrote, you know, and that's available on Amazon.
Why should I choose you?
You know, I just can imagine an elevator, you know, pitch kind of concept, like, so why you? By the way, that's an interview in interviews all the time that we all get. You know, if you're interviewing or being interviewed, it's like, why you? I mean, there's hundreds of you know candidates that are competing against the role. Why should I take you as opposed to the others? Whether you're CEO, entry level, it doesn't matter. Some of that question. I mean, my son is looking for a job, and that's a question he was being asked last week. So it's amazing. It's not like the basic.
If you know your purpose, you can give a high substance response to that question in under 60 seconds.
All right. Well, there you have it, folks. You know, let's find our purpose at PurposeU, that CEO, right? That's the site.
That's for individuals, yep.
Or you can do 7words.biz, you know, one way or the other.
Definitely.
And or can reach out straight, you know, to Ian and, you know, work with him. And hopefully, you know, you'll get that going. So that's it. We're wrapping the show today. Ian, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Herc.
My pleasure, man. And that's it, folks. So we'll be talking soon. New day, new show on the topic. Thank you for watching. Bye for now.